is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on DraftKings FanDuel Week 8 of the NFL. That feels weird to say, huh? Whoa, Week 8 of the NFL. We are halfway through, man. We're halfway home. We are halfway home. We know our contenders and our pretenders. It's a nice little rhyme that you're going to hear a lot across the industry. second time behind the mic today, just diving straight into it. You know, a lot of podcasting going on for me these days, bringing you guys the game by game breakdown for Week 8 of the NFL. We're going through all the games. I'm going to give you the Vegas takes, exactly what is going on in Vegas with these games, what people are seeing, what people are betting on, what the spread is, if there's any movement of now. We keep going throughout the week, guys. The thing you got to remember here, a couple things that, first of all, I want to say thank you to everybody who's been listening, subscribed to the show, reviewing the show is like amazing. It kind of dawned on me yesterday doing the NBA show that, this is startup levels, the stuff. Like, we started this here last NBA season, and now here we are, Week 8 of the NFL, halfway through an NFL season, with some great results. You know, it's been really, really, really special. And, you know, I just got to thank you. Review the podcast, if you would. Follow us on Lineup Logic DFS on Twitter. Follow us on the website, lineuplogicdfs.com. You can get on the mailing list over there. I mail out the updates. I mail out player pools. And I'm not spammy. There's not really much that I have to sell you except for the cheat sheet, which if you're interested in getting involved, that is patreon.com/lineuplogic, where we also have the lineup show. We talk through lots of lineup construction ideas, contrarian and otherwise. I appreciate it. A lot of people coming out to listen to the show. If you're new, you're welcome. Hey, we're doing this year round. We've been doing this for a long time. Where were you during baseball season? I'm kidding. Where were you during baseball season when there was a very small loyal following of listeners who are full-time degenerates like myself? But hey, let's keep grinding. We got a lot of work to do this week in Week 8. Hopefully you went back and you listened to the recap podcast. You know, one trick that I like to do, and this is, wow, this is really full degenerate. Put the podcast on 1.5x. That way you can listen to it in, three quarters of the time. You get through more content faster. I listened to Red Rock B-Ball. I listened to Fantasy Basketball. Locked On Fantasy Basketball has this great, great host, Josh Lloyd, who is an Australian dude, and he talks fast as it is. But to listen to Josh Lloyd at 1.5x with an Australian accent talk about Joshy Richardson is really, really, really hilarious and really special. That show rules. If you're looking for a season-long best basketball podcast, Josh Lloyd and Locked On Fantasy Basketball, that's the way to go. Do appreciate people supporting the show. That's all I'm going to say. Enough talking about the show itself. Let's get into the program here. Week 8. We're going through game by game. Thursday night football. Miami at Baltimore. 37-point spread. 17-20. Baltimore favored by 3. Here's my analysis. Don't play. There is World Series baseball on television. There is NBA basketball. Do not give patronage to Miami, Baltimore. Nope. Just pay attention to see whether or not Matt Moore goes off here and how he looks in this game. There's no reason. I mean, maybe you could play Jay Ajayi, but this game is terrible. 37-point spread? You kidding me? Terrible. Don't even bother. So that's my analysis for the Thursday night game. Jumping into the main slate starts with the London game, Minnesota, Cleveland. Wow. Geez. The people of England must be thrilled to see the Browns and the Vikings play in a 37.5 point total here, 23-14, Minnesota favored by 9. AFPA ranks, here they are, Minnesota 7-2, 16-14 to the core positions, Cleveland 31-12, 19-32. I mean, here's the reality. Cleveland, is a defensive team. They have a defensive identity. They have zero offense. It is a disaster. Hugh Jackson has no idea what to do on offense, but he's a good defensive coach. This team is good at defense. You can't play the running backs on either side of the ball because these run defenses are very, very good. Top five in DVOA to the position. I think you could play Case Keenum and Adam Thielen. I think that that's ideal. I mean, we got burned by Mariota last week, but, you know, I watched that game. Mariota still, I think, is very uncomfortable and not completely healthy and nervous that he's going to aggravate his hamstring. He knows he's his team's best chance to win because Matt Cassel is a disaster, but and they've gotten two wins with him there, hampered. I mean, it says a lot about the quality of playmaker and, you know, game manager that he is, that at, you know, probably 65 to 75%. But it's not ideal to have Mariota hampered. Keenum, healthy, doing well. I think that targets are going to funnel towards Thielen here. 10 targets in both of his last two games without Steph Diggs. Steph Diggs likely going to be out. They have the bye coming up after this, so I think there's some talk about Minnesota resting, you know, Diggs, Bridgewater, those guys. So I like Thielen. I like Rudolph. Very, very, very solid options. Vikings D, also very solid, because who knows who's going to play quarterback, but they're probably only going to play quarterback for a half, maybe, you know, a quarter or two for the Browns, because you're only allowed to play about 50% of the snaps in Cleveland before you get yanked and then traded in for another guy who already got 50% snaps. I don't know. It's a disaster there. The offense is a disaster. So Minnesota defense also in play. Indy, Cincinnati. Listen, I mentioned this morning there's going to be a Joe Mixon game. Guys, we found it. It's the Joe Mixon game. 41 points total here. Low total because they expect Indianapolis to do almost no scoring. 15 to 25. Cincinnati favored by about 10.5 here. Indy rankings, AFPA 29, 31, 29, and 23. Cincy 13, 14, 3, and 4. Listen, the Cincinnati defense is good. They're better than they played against Lev Bell. It's a divisional opponent. It's the best running back in the league. They are going to bounce back. Would it be nice if Adam Jones is back? But yes, but they don't have to force him back here in this situation against Indianapolis. This defense should be fine without him. I think the thing that you have to continue to be aware of, Indianapolis gives up 32 points a game. Most points in all of the NFL. This correlates extremely well with fantasy position points to all positions. So you could certainly go to Andy Dalton here. No problem with going to Andy Dalton. I love Mixon as well. It's complicated, but here's the bottom line. He's the leader. Bernard is very close second. Okay. Hill is still getting carries, which is obnoxious. The majority, 66% of the carries are going to Mixon, however, and he owns all of the work inside of the 10-yard line. Why? Because Dalton has the flexibility to go run or pass in that situation. You're showing your cards if you put Bernard or Hill in the backfield there. They put Mixon in goal-to-go situations inside the red zone because they have more flexibility with Mixon. Run, pass options, Dalton can check to whatever he wants to do in those situations. So Mixon is the guy. He's the most likely to get a touchdown just based on his snap rate and his opportunities inside the 10. He has the most on the team. As for the passing game, obviously A.J. Green. What do you mean? No, of course you play A.J. Green here. He's got a possibility to, you know, literally be 200 yards before halftime. But Brandon LaFell also, he's jumped up to a 24% target share in the last 2 weeks for Dalton. Could be a really nice cheap pivot away from the crowd on AJ, you know, and not necessarily that he's going to outperform AJ Green, but I think that that's a good spot for LaFell to possibly get return value. Let's call it that. Okay. No problem with Tyler Kroft in this spot either. I think Tyler Kroft is certainly getting a fair share of targets, enough targets for you to like him. As for Indy, it's only T.Y. Hilton if you want to get interesting, but you really have to wonder against a good defense whether or not Indianapolis is going to be able to put up any kind of decent effort. I mean, they're just not moving the ball that well. And if you're not taking advantage of, you know, mediocre defenses, you're not going to succeed against good defenses. You know, and this is a good defense. I think they are very much in play as a high-quality defense option for your lineups as well. Carolina-Tampa Bay, 44.5-point over-under. This game is important for both teams inside the division. Both teams struggling a little bit here. 21-23, Tampa Bay favored by 2.5 at home. Carolina, really pretty solid across the board, 11-4, 10-6 in AFPA there. Tampa Bay, we know, has struggled mightily, 32-20, 32-11 in their AFPA rankings. The thing about this, this could end up being a massive disappointment. You have two divisional teams that, you know, want to be defensively minded. I think the problem with Tampa Bay is they're consistently in negative game script. They're consistently in shootout situations where they have to, they're trading blows with people. With the exception of the New England game, where even though, you know, the thing that I remember telling you guys about the New England game was New England and Tampa Bay both had massive success rates. It was red zone struggles and third down struggles where people really buckled in and they really, you know, both teams struggled. But they had massive success rates, yardage created, all that kind of thing. Against Carolina, you got to really think that even this offense can continue. I mean, Buffalo is a very good offense. Jameis went out and put up 340 passing yards. Nobody really has done that yet. Jameis on 44 attempts, they're trading blows with an offense also that, you know, doesn't normally score 30 points. And here comes, you know, Tampa Bay, and they will allow an offense like Buffalo with limited skill position players to not only succeed, but win that game at home. So you have to think that Cam is in an interesting spot. I think I prefer Jameis. He's at home here. You know, and remember, Carolina's passing defense, not actually that good. Over a 100 passer rating. They have a worse passer rating than passer rating allowed than San Francisco. You know, who have they faced that, and when they have faced good quarterbacks, they've given up at least 24 points, 34 to Breeze, 30 to Brady, 24 to Stafford, 28 to Wentz. There's a possibility that Jameis is the next quarterback to go for 30 points against this team. I think it's a nice contrarian spot to go Winston and Evans, winnable matchup. I think that Mike Evans, he got 12 targets, 8 receptions last year in this game. Are they going to try to take him away? Yes, but they didn't have DeSean Jackson as an option last year, so there's going to be less attention given to Evans, and even in a tough matchup against Buffalo, you saw him do well last week. So I think it's interesting to go to Evans and Winston in a contrarian stack. Yes, Cam, fine, I get it. You guys know how I feel about Cam. I just don't think he's that good. But then again, you know what? I hated on him when he was in a very good position in New England, and I said the same thing. So I'm going to try to remain neutral here. I'm going to let you guys make up your own mind about Cam Newton. He is rushing. The rushing floor is there. The rushing attempts are there. He just doesn't have a very good offensive line right now. They don't have a run game. You have to think that they're going to be able to kind of sit back in base formation at least, or light fronts to try and get a little bit of support for that secondary and take away the deep options. I know that Devin Funchess and, you know, Kelvin Benjamin are interesting, but I'm not really completely sure. If you want to look at Christian McCaffrey, I think a lot of people will probably make the correlation in their mind between McCoy and McCaffrey. Yes, fine, okay. McCoy is such a much more established back. They're not the same player. They're not even close to the same player. McCoy gets, you know, 4+ yards per carry. McCaffrey hasn't even been able to, you know, establish getting 10 or more carries per game. He got, you know, 14 touches last week, but, you know, most of those continue to come through the passing game. So, yes, there's a possibility here for McCaffrey. I see what you're saying, but it's not my favorite play on the board. I'm gonna step back from the Carolina analysis and not give too much. It's an interesting spot. I think this game could shoot out. It could go over the total. In that situation, I want to be involved. I want to be involved, and I think I should have. I think you should have exposure to this game as far as offensive weapons, especially in your tournament lineups. Pittsburgh, Detroit, 45 points in Detroit. Detroit coming off the bye. They are 3-point home dogs, 24-21. Pittsburgh favored by 3. Pittsburgh's defense just playing excellent. Top 10 unit right now. Top 10 across the board in AFPA, 6-4-8-4-8 to the core positions. really impressive stuff, how they've been able to limit, you know, some pretty good offenses as well. I mean, think about what they've done in the last couple of weeks in limiting AJ Green and then limiting the Chiefs and Kareem Hunt. You know, they seem to have a very good defensive rapport. Detroit 10-22, 11-27. We saw their rush defense get exposed right before the bye by Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara while they were down in New Orleans. But I do kind of love this game. A couple things here. Bell, obviously. Le'Veon Bell should be a core selection of your cash game lineups. I mean, 35 carries? Are you kidding me? Road matchup where they're facing a defense that just got gashed, fast surface on turf. There's a lot of reasons to like Le'Veon Bell, even though he is on the road and only, you know, implied for 24 points. It's just the volume. You can't fade the volume. There is no doubt in my mind that Cincinnati is a better defense than Detroit. Detroit is going to get gashed by Le'Veon Bell. We have to trust that the volume there. Darius Slay likely going to shadow, but he only shadows him at 65%, you know, percent of the time to 70% of the time. Anytime he's shadowed, there's been about 30% of his routes that he has missed on that guy. So what happens? Antonio Brown is going to get 30% of routes on some other guy. You know that Big Ben is going to look there immediately. Martavis and Juju could be interesting as options away from Brown, but we haven't really seen them succeed in situations where Brown is shadowed. It hasn't really, but there's not really a correlation there. We have seen as Antonio Brown succeed against anybody and everybody who thinks they're good. Period. End of story. It's a real thing. He's too good to cover, so we could definitely go to Antonio Brown. The last time he played Detroit was 2013, and he gashed them, but that was way back in the day. I don't even know if Slay was on the... I forget when Slay came into the league. I do think Stafford will struggle. The problem is when Stafford struggles, he just keeps throwing the ball. As a home dog, I mean, he could throw the ball 38 times and throw 2-3 interceptions and he, you know, threw 2 or 3 touchdowns as well. He's not going to quit. They know they can air it out. He knows how to run a good hurry-up offense. So I think this game could stay close. It could, you know, this is not a boring team, the Detroit offense. So this game could stay close and definitely increase the floor and the ceiling for guys like Le'Veon Bell. You want the Lions to compete, keep this competitive. You want the Lions to not necessarily get out to a lead. I don't think they'll get out to a lead, but you want them to be able to answer. That's going to be the hard part. Except for if you're Le'Veon Bell, it doesn't matter. Positive game script, neutral game script, you just, boom, you're going to get those touches no matter what. I don't think you can go to any Detroit skill position players. I think you just hope that they are successful, right? Is that fair to say? You hope that they are successful. Houston, Seattle, here's a test for... This is a test for Deshaun Watson, and I think you're going to probably see him struggle. There's plenty of tape on him. This Seattle defense is really coming together. I mean, they shut down Goff, they shut down Eli on the road, both of those matchups on the road. They're coming home. They're playing better. 45 point total, 20-25. Seattle favored by about 5.5. Houston ranking 19-3, 21-13. You know, fine, because Seattle's just throwing the ball. That's all they can do. They're not really rushing the ball unless they're up, unless they're ahead. Russ, we know, scrambling, taking deep shots. He's perfectly comfortable with that. I don't know necessarily who I would go to because I think the Houston defense is going to come out prepared for this one. I really do. They've had a week off. I think that they're going to really try to game plan for Russ and for this offensive line. Maybe the pass rush gets a little bit better. I have no idea. As far as Watson and Seattle and Houston offense goes, I'm not touching them. This is a tough spot. 2-9-1-6-21 for Seattle. Yes, they're struggling a little bit with the tight end, but I don't think you need to go to any pieces of that offense. I mean, this is by far the toughest defense that he has faced. The rush defense is back to up to snuff. They stuffed Gurley. You know, they have been very good. So I think the only possible play that you're going here is maybe Seattle with Russ. I think you're just going to Russ and you're just saying, I don't know if I can stack you with anybody, maybe Baldwin. But like I said, I think Houston is going to be prepared for this one because this would be a huge... I mean, this is a tough road game for them. Probably one of the toughest that they have on their schedule. you know, you don't want to necessarily just kind of flash and beat, take Cleveland to the woodshed before the bye week and then come out completely flat. So I think O'Brien is going to be ready for this one. I think, I just don't think it's going to necessarily matter too much for Deshaun Watson. It will matter perhaps for the Seattle offense just kind of being slow. Oakland Buffalo. This is a really interesting game. 46 point total, 21-24.5. Buffalo favored by 2.5 right now. Let me see where the spread bets are at. I wouldn't be surprised if people are just... Wow, people are covering, this total is moving towards the Raiders. It opened at a -3 for Buffalo, but I think the EJ Gaines news really changes things. You're seeing people hammer the over. Wow, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Without EJ Gaines, with the new Raiders kind of offensive scheme of firing the ball deep, total has already jumped by 1.5 points. It's Tuesday, folks. It's Tuesday. Total has jumped by 1.5 points. Raiders are getting 70% of public money to cover this one. Now, I don't know. People are hammering them to cover their over too. So that's really, really interesting. You're going to see people interested in Crabtree and Cooper here. Makes good sense. We saw Jameis get after this pass defense. You know, they're good, but I think without EJ Gaines, they really do have a big hole. They're also without a safety. I forget which safety it is, but they are without a safety in this one. By the way, really, really interesting stuff. Total is moving towards the Bengals, by the way. It opened at 8.5. It's now 10.5. So real lot of confidence in the Bengals. In this one, and people are dead split on Carolina, Tampa Bay, just kind of as I described, dead split. I forgot, I'm not telling you guys spread bets here. That's useful. Back to Oakland, Buffalo. The EJ Gaines news really matters. And remember what Cincinnati was able to do at home against them. They put up a decent number against this defense. We've seen the Buffalo defense give up a decent number, but Tyrod keep them in it and make it actually a little bit more competitive. You know, they were in it in the end of both of these games. They pulled out the Tampa Bay one. They weren't able to pull out the game in Cincinnati. So Cooper Crabtree, very much on my radar. If I'm rostering one, it's definitely Crabtree. I'm a Crabtree guy. You can be a Cooper guy. We'll call the whole thing off. But the reality is that Crabtree is the go-to in clutch situations. Crabtree has the higher catch rate. Crabtree's not going to drop touchdown. Crabtree is the better, safer floor investment here. I mean, we forget, Cooper had a massive week. Crabtree still went for 5 receptions, 70 yards and a touchdown, I think, if I remember correctly. So, it's certainly a good spot for Crabtree here. As far as Buffalo, you got to be interested in LeSean McCoy. There is a lot to like here. Melvin Gordon is the comp, right? He gashed him. Melvin Gordon had a wonderful, wonderful game against Oakland. You know, how I did not necessarily see the Melvin Gordon game against Oakland makes me mad. And I think I have every right to be mad at myself about that. Melvin Gordon, let me remind myself of what he did in Oakland. Yeah, 25 carries for 83 yards and a touch, 9 receptions for 67 and a touch. Dude, 36 fantasy points. Melvin Gordon is an animal. Love the man. Not super efficient, but I just like his game, and I like that they're actually figuring out how to use him in an interesting way. LeSean McCoy very much in play as a comp here. The thing is Oakland, kind of limited Kareem Hunt last week. He had a game. I forget, though, if he got in the end zone. Did he get in the end zone? You're saying to yourself right now, no, or yes, Sean. And now I'm going to ask you to be patient because I can't hear you. I can't hear you. Yeah, I mean, Hunt did a similar thing. Kareem Hunt hasn't scored a touchdown in 4 weeks.
Touchdown regression.
progression. But yeah, that was touchdown regression as well. Everybody who was claiming touchdown regression was right. Yeah, he went for over 100 scrimmage yards on 22 touches as well. So very productive day for him, over 5 yards or nearly 5 yards per carry, over 7 yards per reception. So LeSean McCoy, very, very much in play here because, you know, so much volume. I mean, he had 30 opportunities last week, no doubt about it. Atlanta, New Jersey. Well, sort of. The Jets, 46.5, 25-21 in favor of Atlanta, only favored by 4. God, man, if this had been like the opener, Atlanta would have been favored by like 8. If this had, you know, week 4, Atlanta is favored by 8. The recent struggles of Atlanta have really, really hurt this one. And let's see how's the betting public reacting to this. I mean, they're shorting Atlanta. They are shorting Atlanta. People are taking the Jets to cover. The total has moved towards them, but people do. I mean, oh, wow. No, sharp money is taking Atlanta. There's only 27% of bets, but it's moving towards them. 73% of spread bets is on them, on Atlanta. This is really, really interesting. So, yeah, that's some intense movement for that's an interesting spike. For Atlanta, people really thought 4.5 was a soft line for them. It was, it opened at 4.5 and it's now 4, for in favor of Atlanta. So people like the Jets to cover. They're playing really well. They're going to squeeze the ball. You know, Atlanta's defense, not very good. Atlanta in AFPA, 17, 29, 15 and 5. Yeesh. You know, just struggling, especially on the running game. Their corners are good. They're going to give you trouble on the outside, but they're not going to give you too much trouble over the middle. And they're not going to give you too much trouble with the defensive line. We saw productive run after productive run from what? 8 different running backs in New England, 8 different running backs, Rex Burkhead, Mike Gillisley, Deion Lewis. Who else? Did they go back in the time machine and pick up some of the old who are some of the old running backs in New England? Come on. Ben Jarvis, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, the law firm of Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Yeah, man, it was unbelievable how many different backs were productive. And so, you know, maybe this is a tournament spot for Matt Forte to find in the end zone. We talked about how sneaky productive he was against this Miami defense last week. The Jets in adjusted fantasy points allowed, very interesting, 28, 28, 24, 29. Now, the weird thing is they haven't really been giving up that. I mean, I guess they give up a lot of points as a team. They gave up a lot of points to Miami. Their secondary's not that good. They gave up a lot of points to obviously to the Pats. They've been giving up like 28 points a game, more or less. It's just kind of like you don't necessarily know how to target them. So you could go just straight up Matt Ryan and say the offense is going to flow through him. Who knows who he's going to get the ball to? That makes a lot of sense to me. I think you could definitely go to Julio here. I mean, they made a point of getting him the ball. Okay, 3 targets inside the 10-yard line. He is a beast. The question is Morris Claiborne a good matchup for him? I'll have to look into that tomorrow for the player breakdown. Julio will be on my radar. But I think, you know, Freeman very much in play too. He's the bell cow. He's going to get plenty of work. He had 2 rough weeks, but he should be in a positive game script here, and he should be able to, you know, do Devonta Freeman things. Of course, he's not at home, which is where we normally like him, but I'm okay with it. Last one, Mohamed Sanu, very interesting. New Jersey Jets. That would be great. They just were like, yo, you Giants, you can have New York. We're going New Jersey Jets. We really like New Jersey a lot. The people of New Jersey support this decision. New Jersey Jets. I have some New York friends who would be like, what the fuck? No way. They are allowing plenty of production on short routes, underneath routes. So we saw Jarvis Landry be productive against them last week. We saw Kenny Stills on some underneath stuff in the red zone. He was productive as well. So, you know, that seems to be the way to attack the Jets. As far as the, to attack the Jets, I don't know if you have to have Jets in your lineup as far as offense. This could be a bounce back spot for the Falcons, no doubt about it. I think you got to kind of plant your flag on this one. But they've only been averaging 21 points a game. They've been underperforming their Vegas expectations, which is why I think Vegas is now bearish on them, only giving them a 25-point implied total. And people are saying, nope, they're going to short that. I don't know. I mean, they have enough skill, right? It's whether or not Sarkisian actually figures out what the hell he's doing, which he isn't. There's an interesting thread for Warren Sharp about how Sarkisian is just a disaster. He is. I talked about it this morning. You hired a guy who was fired for being drunk on the job at USC, and all of a sudden you decide that he's stable enough to come be the cornerstone of the most productive offense of 2016. Come on, Dan Quinn. Just do it yourself. I mean, like, or get the quarterback's coach. I don't know. Do something. San Francisco, Philadelphia, 47.5 point total in Philly, 17-30. Philadelphia, the heaviest favorite on the slate, minus 13 here. San Francisco, 26-32, the worst against the running back. 18-3, very solid against the tight end. So it's not going to be an Ertz week, but every week is an Ertz week because Ertz greater than Gronk? I don't think so, but he's challenging. He's really good. Really, really good. Philadelphia, 25, 26, and 24. Don't get fooled by the amount of production that they give up in the passing game. Yards, not touchdowns. That's what they do. Yards, not touchdowns, okay? And San Francisco, I mean, you could go to Garcon in this situation, I suppose, but not really that interesting to me. Obviously, Carson Wentz. Okay. Carson Wentz. He's the best. Heart emojis. We love Carson Wentz. Hooray. Great Alshon Jeffrey week. Could be a great Alshon Jeffrey week. Great LeGarrette Blount week. Definitely still leading that team in carries. Going to get the goal line work. No doubt about it. Smallwood, though, came back last week. He had more yards per carry, so he could be interesting as well. But I want to take this time to get on a small soapbox and be uninterrupted about an issue that that has arisen in the Twitter sphere of NFL, okay? And that is this Dak versus Wentz quote-unquote debate. This is a debate. As if to say that one of these guys is far superior to the other. First of all, the performance during 2017 it clearly shows that in QBR, these guys are very, very similar. They are extremely talented plus quarterbacks for their teams. They're playing extremely well at a very high level and creating very similar outcomes. Winning records, great games, big numbers, fine. So from on a surface level, the difference between these two is not that great. Let's just get that out of the way. The surface level, the difference between these, the way these two guys are playing, are not that great, okay? Very similar. High-quality offensive lines, great arms, good decision-making. They're sneaky. They get away from the pocket. They try not to create negative plays. But let's not forget, this is Carson Wentz's first year being this good. He had 5 games last year where he was that good, and then he tanked. He tanked for 10 straight weeks. Meanwhile, Dak went to the playoffs. It's a running back. It's all Zeke. That was all Zeke. It's all Zeke. He is an elite running back. We have LeGarrette Blount. It's all Carson Wentz. Fine. Okay, great. That's a great crutch argument. But let's go ahead and dive into the statistics, shall we? Okay. So let's take a look at the difference between Dak and Zeke this year. The difference is primarily that Carson Wentz has been better on third down. Okay? That's it. Dak has been, they're the same in passer rating. They're same in passer rating on short routes. Dak is significantly better on deep balls. His passer rating completion rate on deep balls is better. It's higher. I don't know what you want me to say. It's an objective measurement. It's not an eye test. It's not BS. The numbers for Dak also include a bye week. Okay? I don't believe that Philadelphia has been on the bye week yet. Is Carson Wentz exciting? Is he a playmaker? Does he have great third down ability? Yes. Is the difference between these two guys that different? No. But the difference is that Dak has been doing this for 2 years. He did it last year. He did what Carson Wentz did this year, last year. Okay? That's the thing. He did it last year. So all of a sudden, people are saying Wentz is better than Dak. He's not. It's recency bias. It's confirmation bias and it's recency bias. I think Carson Wentz is pretty good. Look at how good he is this year. And wow, did you see that game last night where he threw 4 touchdowns? Yeah, I did. He looked great. He looked great, you guys. He's great. But let's not get it twisted. Dak, still legit. Very, very good. Now, as far as rostering Carson Wentz against San Francisco, fuck yeah. We're going to roster Carson Wentz against San Francisco. Let's do it. I want to win money. I'm not an idiot. Yes, we did it with Dak and Zeke. Of course, I want to do it again this week. Let's run it back. All right, that's simple enough analysis. I'm soapbox removed. I'm glad no one interrupted me. Chicago, New Orleans, 48 point total in this one. New Orleans favored by 9. But hold your horses right there, gang. Lot of people pretty torn on this one. 50-50 right now. Total is dropping. Okay. The under, and I think that's a sharp bet. The under on this one. I bet the under here. I think Chicago's defense is better than people give it credit for. And they are squeezing the ball. There's not going to be fireworks from Drew Brees. They've proven that they're okay, you know, slowing things down. Chicago can't throw the ball. So there's not going to be fireworks on their side. It's going to be pound, 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 the rock. But I think 9 is a little bit tight. I think the Bears can cover this just because of their ability to not let up a lot of points. Think about the offenses that they've contained. They beat Pittsburgh. They contained Pittsburgh. They contained the Falcons and stayed in that game until the last possession. Why all of a sudden is New Orleans getting 9-point spread, besides the fact that they're at home and they've been playing really well? That's it. I don't think this is a sharp line. I think that Bears can cover this one. And listen, the knee-jerk reaction from the public, from the, you know, the Joes out there is, Drew Brees versus the Bears? Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm definitely into Drew Brees versus the Bears. Come on, Chicago, 9 in AFPA to the quarterback. They've taken on Ben Roethlisberger. They've taken on the high-flying Vikings, who, like it or not, they throw a ball a lot. The high-flying Vikings is a good description, okay? They were in that game, too. They've taken on... Okay, hashtag elite Joe Flacco. Cam Newton, they just destroyed... Okay, not a single point from Cam Newton. They're 9, 13 to the running back, 5 to the wide receiver, 15 to the tight end. This is a good defense. And that's why, I mean, this is the identity that they have. John Fox, defensive coach. Vic Fangio, very good defensive coordinator. Their safeties are playing phenomenally well. This unit is playing well. They control the clock with their running game. They just bleed games into obliviously boring matchups. Fine. I don't think that you go Drew Brees versus the Bears. Okay, and I don't necessarily know that you ride this Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara thing. I'm like, is it possible that they have success? Yes, but we've seen good running backs and good offenses struggle against this team. We've seen running backs not have great games against this team, and I think the timeshare probably causes you to pause and say, I don't know if we want to do that. what I do really, really want to do possibly is Jordan Howard. Saints have allowed 52% rushing success rate across the entire face of their defensive line, nearly 4.8 yards per carry. People don't think Jordan Howard on the road is a good call. No, Jordan Howard is getting elite rushing volume. You put him in the same bucket as Fournette and who's the other one that doesn't get any receptions? Who's the other running back? Doesn't get any receptions. I can't remember. CJ Anderson. Well, not quite CJ Anderson, because CJ Anderson hasn't gotten any work lately. But that's what I'm thinking. I mean, Jordan Howard here, man, he could carry the ball 30 times. well into this game. They're going to run the ball no matter what. We've seen him have big games against Pittsburgh. We've seen him have good games against Baltimore. Better defenses on the whole. New Orleans certainly in good spot here to be taken advantage of in that situation. So I think Howard is very much in play in this game. Chargers versus the Patriots. This is going to be an interesting one. 48.5 point total. 20.5 for the Chargers. 28 for New England. Actually, I think this is a pretty sharp line. And I think New England could cover. The way that they've been playing the last couple weeks, I think they could cover this one. Chargers 4 to the quarterback, AFPA. Very good to the quarterback right now. This defense is getting scary. And they invested in it. It's Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. I mean, you know, Casey Hayward, if Jason Verrett was playing, this team would have been good for a long time. But 25 to the running back, 20 to the wide receiver, 1 to the tight end. Gronk could get shut down here. New England, 30, 24, 28, and 23. You know, at first glance, what really stands out is this is running backs, running backs, running backs. Deion Lewis, Melvin Gordon. And yes, I'm saying Deion Lewis. He's the most interesting back in that backfield as far as his ability to do catch the ball and run the ball. He also has explosive ability in the open field, something that Mike Gillisley and Rex Burkhead don't necessarily have. Could he get sniped at the goal line? Yes, because he is also the most likely candidate for breaking off a 40-yarder. He's also, you know, the second most likely candidate behind James White for catching 3 or 4 balls for 40 yards. So Deion Lewis to me, very, very interesting. But I got to think, you know, I got Melvin Gordon is just in a great spot. The question you're going to ask yourself is Melvin Gordon on the road? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he led the team in snaps in Oakland and New York, close games there. I think Gordon is going to see some big opportunities in this game. The Pats are allowing 70 yards per receiving to backs. That's a big number. You know, he's going to be on the field in dire situations when they need talent. It's going to be Melvin Gordon. Rivers is certainly comfortable giving him the ball. I also think it's an interesting Keenan Allen spot. Okay. We saw plenty of that underneath yardage from Sanu. Are they going to bracket him like they did Julio? Not quite, because I think that Belichick recognized Julio's the kind of guy who can take over a game with one play. You know what I mean? Like, you see something, Julio gets out into the open field down the field, and they hit him on those deep crosses, and all of a sudden, the defense has to completely change the way that they approach the offense on the opposite side. Keenan Allen's just a different receiver. I think they'll let him have some underneath stuff. We've seen Sanu, other receivers on the underneath routes out of the slot be successful against this team. As for the Pats, like I said, Deion Lewis, the most interesting one. You know, fast backs, shifty backs. Backs who are good at contact have been good against this team. Hunt had a good game. Wayne Gallman had a good game against them. That was his last good Wayne Gallman sighting. Hate to say that. I did win that bet with Spectre, though. I will continue to hold that. I won that bet. I did lose the Blake Bortles bet. If you're on Twitter and you see that my new handle like picture is a picture of Blake Bortles in an American flag do-rag, I'm sorry that you have to see that picture. It does exist. A sweaty Jacksonville Blake Bortles day. I lost the Allen Hurns Marquise Lee bet on the lineup show. There's going to be more profile pictures bets coming up this week because they're not going down softly. Okay, there's going to be some good ones. And there could be some Bortles pictures involved. Although the Jaguars aren't playing. So Deion Lewis is very interesting to me. Tournament lineups, I think. Melvin Gordon, I'm going to have a hard time not playing Melvin Gordon. I'm just going to say that. I'm going to have a really hard time not playing him. And then want Le'Veon Bell. It's going to be Le'Veon Bell, Melvin Gordon. It's going to be Le'Veon Bell, Joe Mixon. Hard decisions. Hard challenges. Dallas, Washington. 50-point total. This is a really interesting game here as well, man. 50-point total, 26-24. Dallas is 2-point road favorites in this one. Dallas, though, the worst bad defense. This has shootout potential written all over it. And you know what's interesting? If you look at the numbers, somebody did Josh ADHD of Fantasy, Fantasy ADHD, Josh, writer for Roto-Grinders, tweeted out how many freaking yards Kirk Cousins had. He had over 300 passing yards. That's kind of what Philadelphia does. Point being is the Redskins offense seems to have some momentum. They have a lot. They're getting a lot of people involved. They're not just, you know, they're not like stuck in the mud. They're moving the ball. This is a really, really interesting game. This game, you know, and people like, it looks like people like Dallas here to cover 2.5, which I think is fair. People like Dallas to cover 2.5. We're not really seeing any movement on the over, but I think you might see some movement on the over for this game, although 50.5 is a pretty high number. In fact, it is the highest number on the slate. So you're going to want exposure to this game, no doubt about it. Kirk Cousins, certainly interesting as Dallas is 27th in AFPA to the quarterback, 23, 24. To running back, wide receiver, and 16 to the tight end. Great spot for Kirk. I think that's an interesting one. Crowder is interesting too. The Cowboys pass defense, we know, struggles with the slot receiver. Decent on the outside. You know, but Crowder got 6 targets last night. He didn't do a lot with them. Okay. And he dropped, we didn't drop a couple, but he didn't convert all of them into catches. He was like 3 catches, I think. He still hasn't really popped. I think it's interesting to go look at a healthy Jordan Reed or a contrarian Vernon Davis, who continues to just get wide open looks in the middle of the fucking field. Vern, every time I say this all the time, every time I look up, there's Vernon Davis catching the ball, running 45 yards down the field, playing juke out with some safety. Like, oh, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And he's 40 years old. Man, still got it. As for the Cowboys, yeah, you got to look at some Cowboys here, man. Dak very much in play. Zeke in play. The volume is too good to not like Zeke inside a divisional game. I don't care. I mean, the Redskins are a pretty good defense, you know, but we've seen them in 2 straight weeks now against San Francisco and then against Philadelphia just give up production. They're giving up production. I think you're going to see Josh Norman return this week. He's probably been saving himself up for this one. They would have liked to have had him last night to get over that second half, try to take away a little bit of that, you know, stretch the field stuff that Carson Wentz was doing. But yeah, you gotta like Dak, you gotta like Zeke, and of course Dez. I mean, I think he's gonna get Norman. He's probably gonna struggle with shadow coverage, but they've been practicing this and trying to get, you know, him in a good spot against shadow coverage. The best way to attack Washington, though, and we see it again and again, is through the tight end. So Jason Witten might be your exposure. Because, I mean, he still gets looks. I mean, Jason Witten still runs routes. He still gets looks. He's on the field so, so often. You know, and he is one of those tight ends who continues to get red zone action. You know, and Dak looks for him. Dak knows where to find him. I mean, 4 targets for 54 and a touchdown. 4 targets last week in San Francisco for 54 and a touchdown in positive game script. Green Bay, competitive game, 10 targets for 61 yards. So in Washington, he's had success there before, 2, 3, and 4 targets last year for, you know, 30, 50 yards respectively. So you could go back to, you could definitely go back to Jason Witten. But Jordan Reed, really nice to see him start to pop. Last week, finally looks like maybe he is healthy after the bye week. You know, he got, that was classic Jordan Reed. 8 receptions, 64 yards, 2 touchdowns. And against Dallas last year in the, you know, the week 12 matchup, 10 for 95 and 2 touchdowns. So is that going to happen again? I don't know, but he is a beast and he is liable to go off for multiple touchdowns at any point. He's got great hands too. So you never want to sleep on Jordan Reed. So that game is going to be one that you're wanting exposure to. So games we want. Oh, by the way, Monday night, Denver, Kansas City, 44 points total, 18-25. Kansas City favored by a touchdown and a half, a point, not a touchdown and a half. That would be 10 and a half points, 7.5 points. Denver 12 to the 12, 1, 9, 20. Interesting things going on in Denver. They were really good. The defense was very good against against the Chargers. Like I said, they limited the success rate. Short field for the Chargers. Lots of turnovers for the Chargers. That defense is insane. If you listen to the stats pod, I read some stats. I can't remember how many turnovers they've created in the last couple weeks, but unbelievable production there. Kansas City, 22, 10, and 31 to the core positions. I have a bad feeling, though. Simeon has to throw the ball here. That's how you beat Kansas City. You have to be able to stretch the field, which is why you saw Oakland float the ball 52 times against them. If you don't attack them over the top, if you don't try to attack them over the top, they're just going to stack the box. So those safeties are going to crash. So Simeon very, very much, is going to have to throw the ball. I don't know. The line is not that good right now. He's been getting banged around. He's not making great decisions. He can't get the right people involved. It doesn't seem like he's in good form. So this could be a tough spot for Denver once again, but a good spot possibly for for Alex Smith, maybe Travis Kelce in here. That's how I would get my exposure to that. If you want to play the Thursday to Monday day slate, here's an interesting idea. Play the Alex Smith, Travis Kelce stack. Completely fade Thursday night and get the rest of your lineup from Sunday. Huh? Hey, okay. Okay. Somebody's going to do that. If it works, tell me. If it doesn't work, you can tell me too, but I don't want to hear anybody complaining. It's just an idea. I'm an ideas man. Player breakdown coming at you tomorrow. Quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, the whole shenanigans, all those guys. Hey, listen, if you like the show, retweet it, review it, share the love, tell your friends and family about how much time you waste listening to me. I would love for them. Don't tell them that. Don't tell them. That's embarrassing for both of us. All right. I'm done. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.